Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down to the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
One on the end zone. Caught. Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks here with Roman Oben. It is hump day, baby. That means that we get to rock and roll with Giants fans for the next hour. We welcome you into the show. Of course, phone lines will be open throughout the show from noon to 1 o'clock Eastern Time. 201-939-4513 is the number you want to get in. As well, as always, I'm sitting here with my computer monitoring Twitter at Giants, hashtag Giants chat. We will share your tweets throughout the show, whether it's a comment or a question. By all means, please hit us up. Also, you can follow myself and Roman on Twitter. I'm at Anita Marks. Roman is at r_Oben if you've got, again, any questions or comments. So first and foremost, Roman, this is my first chance. Like, literally, I'm just seeing you for the first time since the game, and obviously a very disappointing loss to the Colts, 40-24. Where do you think mentally, we heard some comments, I'm sure you did as well, right. Antrel Roll on WFAN yesterday, but where's this team at mentally right now? How do they rebound from this and get ready for the Seattle Seahawks on the road out west?
Well, I didn't hear Antrel Roll's comments yesterday specifically, but I did hear the comments he made after the game. And when he had the sunglasses on, and I mean, he looked like he was going to cry. I mean, some you know, you hear people saying, oh, it looked like T.O. when he was talking about Tony Romo. You know, the old, that's my quarterback,
that's
my team.
That's my quarterback.
But it's the passion in which Antrel Roll has, and he's been one of the more consistent Giants players over the last, 5 years. The team as a whole has not been as consistent, and specifically offensively, Anita. This team now, I think 19 games straight where they haven't scored in their opening possession. And when you're playing the best offense in the league in the Indianapolis Colts, and after the crap show that they put on in Pittsburgh, you knew they weren't going to come into MetLife Stadium and play poorly 2 weeks in a row, especially not defensively. So you just had to start fast. And I know that 3 points, I think the second or third series – no, march down, score. Defense was making them punt early on. I mean, the score was reasonable, I think, early in the game. And had the offense had the firepower they had in the second half, in the first half, rather, they had in the second, we might have seen a different outcome. And obviously, yeah, second half, they were playing catch-up.
Yeah, but also, the Colts come with a much different defense the second half than they did in the first half because they were up. So, somewhat of a prevent D. They switched up their defense a little bit.
Yeah, and I spoke to Greg Minuski before the game. You know, he just said, hey, we got to play better than last week. He was my linebackers coach and then defensive coordinator when I was in San Diego. Rob Chudzinski, I have ties with him as well, who's kind of assistant head coach, assistant offensive coordinator. So they've got a winning formula in Indianapolis, and to make Andrew Luck successful, and teams that a lot of fans don't know this, but teams outside of the New York market, outside of the major markets, when you're on the road on a Monday night or Sunday night game against a major market team, a la Washington, New York, Philly, I mean, you've got to be at your best because there's more visibility, more people watching, more local writers, and a lot of guys, cornerback for the Colts, Vontae
Davis.
Yeah, Vontae Davis.
For a guy Vernon like, Davis's brother.
Yeah, exactly. For a guy like him to have perceived as a better corner, it's always been this unwritten rule. You go do it against a team like the Giants on Monday night in their place when all the writers are watching, the whole world is watching. So the Indianapolis Colts, again, proved why they're the cream of the crop. And Andrew Luck, why he's the best quarterback under 30 years old.
I think you made an interesting point. And I said this. By the way, I know I hosted the show with Feagles last week. You and I missed our regular hump day hosting.
With the bye week
event,
coming off,
right.
All that stuff.
So I went to the game as a fan.
Wow.
I know.
You sat in the stands?
I sat in the stand. No. How do you fans don't sit in the press box. The press box is, by the way, press box is so boring.
It's work, though. It's like work.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
writing articles. You're getting ready to maybe give a report.
You're eating. Then you go back. You eat more.
Yeah.
You eat again. I mean, no, the press box is really boring. There's no beer. There's no adult beverage.
Well, the free food aspect of the press box,
that's a positive. But anyway, this my point is, I was really excited. This is my first. This was my first Giants game as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? As like a spectator, standing in the stands with the fans and did it.
Where'd you sit exactly?
Oh, it was horrible. It was just such a horrible experience.
Did they know it was you? Did you, like, were you have a little toboggan on?
I think maybe a few people recognized, but whatever. I mean, that's not the case. The point is, some of the things the fans were saying, it was very interesting. Some of the things the fans were saying while I was sitting in the stands in regard to, like, just how horrible the team was playing was, like, unbelievable to me. Like, you know, where's Gilbride? What's McAdoo doing? What kind of? And then whenever Hakeem Nicks did something well, he never did that with us. Da 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 stuff. I can't say because this is a family show. You know, it's just it was very interesting to take in the game as a spectator and listening to Giants fans around me and how angry and upset and as disappointed they are. Wow, Roman, what an experience. Needless to say, I watched the fourth quarter in bed.
Wow.
I left after the second series in the third quarter. I had to leave. It was so uncomfortable. It was so bad. I had to leave, and I watched the fourth quarter in bed.
And as a former Giants player, I was a part of that halftime celebration. We all lined up, and we all were introduced individually. I think I stood right next
to you. I saw you.
Yeah, I stood right next to Jason Sehorn. Imani Toomer was across from me, Antonio Pierce.
I saw you. You gave Strahan some love. You gave him some.
Yeah, and he's, you know, to see a guy in our generation. You know, I grew up, we all grew up watching Lawrence Taylor when we were in high school or watching some of the older Giants. You know, obviously, you know, I grew up in Washington, D.C. as a Redskins fan as a kid, watching the Hogs and Joe Theismann, those Redskins-Giants battles in the NFC East. And to see someone in your generation, you know, be considered a Hall of Famer along with those great names was a great accomplishment.
Did you get teary-eyed?
No, I just was happy for him. We were actually in the back room.
You did nothing.
I don't get teary-eyed for that. I'm happy for him because Michael Strahan is a guy who gets.
There are tears of joy, Roman.
They just weren't any tears at all.
Okay.
It was just like we were in the back room. It's like this back room in the stadium where the person does the national anthem, the halftime marching band people.
Right.
And Strahan, his family.
It's called the Giants Drumline.
Yeah, that thing. Sorry. And, you know, me, Imani Toomer, Strahan, and we were, like, sharing this, like, intimate moment, and it was like we were back in the locker room again. We're busting his chop because he lost all this weight because he's doing the Magic Mike Part 2 movie, and we're asking him, is he waxing? Is he have to wear a speed? I mean, it's funny, but it's like you're busting your teammates' chops in a locker room.
Right.
And we spend so much time together for years. I mean, I was here for my first 4 years, my tumor and Strahan were teammates for 12 years. I mean, you spend that much time with someone, you know them intimately. And again, I'm happy for Michael Strahan, his accomplishments. He's going to have a Hollywood star in the next 5 years, I'm sure. But on the flip side, as a fan, to celebrate the history of the Giants and then to see the team go out in that fashion and not do well,
disappointing,
was very disappointing.
Again, 201-939-4513. Keep the phone calls coming, but back to my original point before I got like derailed with my whole Monday night fan spectator experience is that one thing that was evident is that you're going up against the Colts, Roman. You can't put up 3 points, you know, because their offense is so explosive, but they can be scored on. I mean, look at what Ben Roethlisberger and
we're not
and
saying
the
put
Pittsburgh
up 40
Steelers.
Against them. Put up 10 in the first half.
Something.
Defense makes them punt.
Yes.
And then put yourself in a position to win the game in the fourth quarter.
Yes. You can't beat the Colts putting up 3 points, unfortunately. And obviously, some news. Unfortunately, Prince Amukor is out for the season because of a torn bicep. Zach Bellman, of course, now will start opposite Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, who him as well is dealing with some issues, leg and back issues. Going, having to jump on a flight now, Roman, head out west, take on a Seattle Seahawks team who kind of got their stuff back together. If you did watch that game against the Oakland Raiders, Marshawn Lynch was just a beast, a Skittles-eating beast, not only on the ground but in the air as well. So a tall task ahead for this Giants defense. Specifically, hopefully they get Colin Jenkins back. They're really going to need him in that middle, the middle of the defensive line to stop Marshawn Lynch, but also – you know, Russell Wilson really doing a lot with not a lot. I mean, no disrespect to Doug Baldwin, but is he really a number one, as we like to call him, wide receiver in the NFL? No, on another roster, he'd probably be a number three. You have Curse, Luke Wilson, this rookie tight end.
Right.
I mean, so there's really, you know, there's not a lot of big, exciting names happening on the offensive side of the ball, but yet they win because they play good defense, they have solid special teams, and Russell Wilson is a good game manager.
Look, they're playing blue-collar football, and obviously a fan's going to say, all right, they beat the Raiders, and they needed that kind of win to kind of get them back. They're not the team they were this time last year for one reason or another, But they still have the ability that if they can continue to play better as the season goes on, they may be considered one of the better teams in the NFC. Again, obviously Arizona is really the king of that division now. But in terms of what the Giants are going to have to do, you have to look at the games that they lost. And when I was on a part of teams that play these type of games, you're struggling, you're finding answers. You know, when things are great, you're doing well, 30 points a game. When things aren't going great, you're giving up 32 points a game, was what the defense is doing at this point. You've got to go make a team on the road be the team they were the games that they lost. And I think there's going to be a lot of heavy emphasis on the games where Seattle didn't do so well. They have lost at home. Dallas did beat them in their place. There are some chinks in their armor. They don't have a true number one receiver, deep threat, take the top off of defense, whatever you want to call it. So there is some success to be had in Seattle. This isn't the Seattle Seahawks team, you know, 2013 that was, you know, predicted to win the Super Bowl. I mean, they're fighting for a playoff spot in a division.
Well,
they lost.
Keep in mind, they lost like 10 players.
They lost
10 players in free agency last year.
Which will happen, you know, when you win the Super Bowl. That's what happens. But I think quickly, the Giants have to, and there's still a few players on this team from that 2012 season. Defending Super Bowl champions, trying to kind of reestablish your identity, trying to go to the playoffs, getting your best shot from everyone you play every week. And so I think in that regard, there's some similarities between what the Giants are going to expect and what they know they're going to have to do on Sunday to try to pull away a victory.
Again, Roman Oben, Anita Marks with you today on Big Blue Kickoff Live, with you till 1 o'clock Eastern time. We're going to start taking your calls in just a hot second, 201-939-4513. Real quick, I have to mention this. Listeners are winning cash every week at DraftKings.com. I actually played this last week. And have you done this yet?
Are you allowed to do that, or is it? I don't know. I'm not.
Of course. Who's
I'm not into that.
It's fantasy football.
I'm a kindergartner when it comes to fantasy and all that stuff. So.
Anyway, it's
you gotta spoon feed it to me.
It is addicting. This is addicting. America's favorite 1 week fantasy football site, where it's like a new season every time you play. Hurry! I love that. Get free entry into the $100,000 fantasy football contest this weekend, where first place takes home 10 grand. Head to DraftKings.com now and enter code BLUE to play for free. DraftKings.com. Bigger events, bigger winnings, bigger millionaires. Enter BLUE for free entry now at DraftKings.com, the DraftKings.com. Anyway, yeah, so for the first time this season, I played this past week. Ooh, it's so much fun. I had like three teams going, and then I had some Monday night football players going.
All right.
Yeah, it's fun. Besides just, I play in seven leagues. So, but what's great
about— How do you keep up with all that?
It's my job. It's my job.
Right.
Hashtag, it's my job to win, right? It's my job to win.
Let's do
hashtag
it.
Champagne problems. Anyway, let's continue with the calls. We go to Will calling in from the Bronx. Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, Will. You're first up, so bring it strong, my friend. What you got?
Let's go, BX.
Wow. I was just wondering, is there any mathematical way that the Giants can resolve this season? I mean, I don't see them making it in the playoffs by wild card, but do they still have a chance to win this division and make an impact going strong in the second half of this season?
Well,
what's your thoughts on that?
Well, they've already lost.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Will. They've already lost two in the division. In terms of tiebreakers, they lost to Detroit. They lost to Arizona. They can't lose any more NFC games at all. They can't lose any more games at all, period. If you go 3-5 at the bye week at the midway point and go, let's say, 6-2 down the stretch, that's still a 9-7 season that will not guarantee you a playoff victory, because there's other teams that will have the tiebreaker over you. Even if the division, let's say if Washington gets on a roll and everyone loses two games in the division, then there'll be some other type of tiebreaker. But maybe you can explain that, Anita. But
no, I mean, let's break down the division.
Yeah.
Seriously. Okay, you've got Philadelphia sitting at 6-2. They're at home Monday night against Carolina, and Mark Sanchez now. Could you write a better script for Mark Sanchez? Seriously. Okay.
I'm happy for him.
I am too. You know, the butt fumbler. He leaves the Jets. He goes to Philadelphia. This is a system that fits him to a T. Chip Kelly's in love with this kid. Listen, there's a reason why they didn't play him in that fourth preseason game.
Marvin Austin wasn't on the other side of the
Chip Kelly said, listen, he came in last week. We didn't miss a beat. So this is going to be a really interesting Monday night football game. Chip Kelly believes in this guy. I think, and from what I understand, some executives in Philadelphia believe in Mark Sanchez more so than they do Nick Foles. So they're looking this as somewhat of a positive. You hate for a guy to go out with a clavicle break to give another guy an opportunity. But Philadelphia seems pretty confident with Mark Sanchez. Going up against Carolina, Cam Newton, that offensive line, they just haven't been very good. I think Philadelphia wins on Monday night. Dallas, they're across the pond already. Tony Romo made the trip to London. They're taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I don't, you know, even if it's not Tony Romo and it's Brandon Whedon, with DeMarco Murray, I think Dallas wins. I think Dallas beats Jacksonville over there in London.
Yeah.
Then you've got a Giants team who, unfortunately, out of all four of these teams in the division, are going up have probably, I think, the most difficult week heading into Week 9. Week 10. And that is going up against the Seattle Seahawks at Seattle. I think it'd be different, Roman, if they were here in New York. But going up against Seattle at Seattle with the 12th man, I just don't have a good feeling about this game for the Giants. And then Washington, I'm not sure who they do you know who they play this week?
I'm not sure.
I'll pull it up. But with RG3 back, very interesting scenario what's going on over there. But not
Vikings.
Buccaneers. They played the Vikings last week. They play the Buccaneers, who, by the way, the Buccaneers so Mike Glennon came out and announced that he's been benched. They're going back to Josh McCown this week. So the once was starting quarterback made the announcement that he was being benched and clued in the media that Josh McCown. So anyway, I guess where I'm going with this is, I don't know.
Oh, they're on the bye. They have a bye this week. Then they play the Bucs.
And then they play the Bucs. Okay, thank you. So I don't know. It's just, and then after Seattle, it's San Francisco and then Dallas again. I don't think the playoffs are likely for this Giants team this season. I mean, come on.
Well, everyone circled this stretch of the Giants schedule for.
Yeah, didn't Jerry Reese call it the murderer's row?
Yeah, and again, everybody in the division has to play these teams, and then when you get to the end of the season, that last four games are winnable, or more winnable perceivably than this stretch. But you've got to go out there. It's a one-game season every week. Take care of your business. Can't worry about who's losing to who. But I think the Giants have put themselves in a position at two games below 500, Anita, to be in this 7-9 to 8-8 dogfight at the end of the season. If they get a game better than last year, they're 8-8, two games better, they're 9-7. But that still won't be enough to go to the playoffs.
Are you confident that they're going to go to Seattle and win in Seattle?
I'm not confident based on their inability to start fast on offense that they can do what it takes to win on the road. Now, can it happen? Absolutely can happen. Have they proven otherwise? The answer is no.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Eric calling in from North Dakota. Wow, Eric, thank you for tuning in to Big Blue Kickoff Live from North Dakota.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Nina and Rome. Hey, here's the thing. If we are struggling with our secondary, with knowing we lost Prince, what can we go to get players like outside, from the Giants? If we can't depend on these players, they don't play good, can we get maybe a free agent out there, or bring up Corey Webster, or bring somebody,
Another Corey Webster reference. thanks, Eric. Do you have another question or just that one?
That was the main question about that. That was pretty much it. Thank you, guys.
Well, a few things. The trade deadline has come and gone already. So,
yeah,
so
I mean, this pickings are really, really
so
slim.
To trade for somebody, and if somebody's out there, chances are, they're not too spectacular.
No, talking a practice squad guy.
Yeah, or they still would not be out there. So at this point in time in the season, I think, especially since, nothing was really done at the trade deadline, you've got to roll with what you got.
Yeah, 100%. I don't see them. Now, one group that needs to improve is the defensive line, and the Giants' defensive line needs to get back to a place where they can rush and get after a quarterback like Russell Wilson with four guys, and that leaves seven people in coverage, and that gives you a better ability to defend things on the perimeter. If you can't get to the quarterback with four guys, you're always going to have to send a fifth, perhaps a sixth blitzer. And you talk about Colin Jenkins hopefully coming back this week. That's going to be a big plus for the interior. There hasn't been a lot of just pass rushing ability just from the interior. I mean, this Giants defensive line over the last few years with, you know, Chris Canty, Linville Joseph, even Colin Jenkins last year. I mean, Mike Patterson's, you know, doing a good job. There's always, you know, Hankins is doing a good job, and they're always revolving younger players and moving them up. But, you know, in the heyday of this Giants pass rush, it was always on the four defensive linemen. When, you know, Tuck, Strahan, Kiwi, obviously OC. I mean, there was always a lineage of guys that you could just get to the quarterback with four guys, and I think that's not the case right now. You know, this team, when in 2011 at their peak, I mean, you're talking like 48 sacks, 45 sacks. At the halfway point, I mean, look at Indianapolis Colts, the team they just played. They came to this game with 21 sacks without their number one pass rusher, number 98. His name just lost me. We got on IR for Indianapolis. Mathis.
Right, Robert Mathis.
Yeah, Robert Mathis. Without Robert Mathis, they found a way to get 21 sacks, and that's Greg Minuski and these guys putting guys in a position to succeed. So you got to get the pressure with four, maybe a fifth guy, and that instantly solves the problems of the secondary.
Let's take a few tweets here. Again, follow us at Giants and hashtag Giants Chat. I'll be monitoring your tweets. I'll share them on the show. Roman fans, especially this one, Ben, is disappointed in Reuben Randle. Again, on Friday when I hosted the show with Feagles, one of our questions was, which player, you know, we had heard Tom Coughlin last week say the players need to play above the X's and O's. So both Feagles and I kind of pinpointed a player. Who would we like to see play above the X's and O's? And for me, it was Reuben Randle. That was the guy
100%.
That's the guy that I need, you know, without Victor Cruz, you know, this is Reuben Randle's third year. I want to see him play above the X's and O's. Obviously, it didn't happen. Fans a little disappointed in Reuben Randle. Here is a tweet. He's been a detriment to the offense. It's time to phase him out. Get Corey Washington some playing time. And it was interesting because where I did sit, I was just a few rows behind the Giants bench, and I did see Corey Washington. And I said to myself, I said, wow, you know, this offense is struggling. Why not? Like, get Corey Washington in there. I get the whole, listen, he did well in preseason, but look at who he went up against. He went against second and third team players on defense. But at this point in time, I mean, aren't you itching a little bit, Roman, to see what Corey Washington might be able to do for this offense? A little B12 shot, a little spunk?
Well, this was the argument about Jarrell Jernigan for 4 years, right? Do we need to see what he can do? We need to see what he can do. Corey Washington, and Tom Coughlin said it, and people have said it, he needs to continue to improve in all phases of his game, not just that jump ball fade route in the end zone on the goal line. I mean, Corey Washington, he's had a tremendous training camp, had a great preseason, and he definitely earned his spot on the team. But the offensive failures, or woes, if you will, aren't because Corey Washington's not on the field. It's how about not dropping a football on 3rd and 7? You talk about Reuben Randle, Preston Parker. How about the offensive line, you know, playing better, getting Andre Williams through the hole before he gets initial contact, and it's always 2nd and 5. I mean, Eli Manning said it twice last week, and he doesn't really say this a lot. He said, you know, those 2nd and longs kill us. You know, that running game kills us. You know, those manageable 3rd downs would give you more options, especially in this type of offense. So I get it. Corey Washington, great player. He's an ascending guy, but this thing can't be about getting one guy the football when the guys you have to do the job aren't getting it done. That's Preston Parker, the drops, Ogletree. I think you saw him run a couple of go routes. I mean, and he's a one-stop guy. I don't think he's going to sign a 5-year deal to stay here when the season's over.
Right.
But again, this can't be about getting one guy. Not you, but I think fans.
No,
you hear that a lot.
Listen, I'm not sitting here telling you that Corey Washington is the answer. That's not what I'm saying.
Well, he got his touchdown. I mean, he got his first touchdown. He got a few catches on Sunday, and you know, obviously they were in pre-event and they said, look, let's just start getting some guys in. And I'm sure the coaching staff was frustrated with Reuben Randle dropping on 3rd and 7 and patting his chest. My bad. I mean, that's – you're a professional at this point. Reuben Randle is a great-looking guy physically. He's a great talent. And I think a lot of people – this isn't my opinion, but a lot of people, fans, on tweets, on everything I've seen, say, when is Reuben Randle going to decide that he's going to be the guy? Like, when is he going to become the 2011 Hakeem Nicks or the 2009 Hakeem? When is Reuben Randle going to become that guy? And well, I can't answer that question. Only number 82, Reuben Randle, can answer that question.
This is the conversation I had with Feagues on Friday. I felt this was the game that we needed him to really kind of turn that corner, step up, especially with Victor Cruz out. you know, so.
Of course. And I gave you this scenario, my addition by subtraction theory, that when you take number 80 out of the huddle, the offensive line has to say, we better do our job because Cruz can't bail us out. We don't have any visions of Cruz taking an 80-yard go route like the old days. Larry Donnell's got to catch everything they throw at him within a 5-yard radius. Reuben Randle's got to step up. Odell Beckham Jr., who's done an admirable
job.
Wow,
what a game. Odell Beckham Jr. and Steve Weatherford, silver lining in that gray cloud on Monday. You do got to tip your hat and you got to commend them. Odell Beckham Jr., first 100-yard game. You know, the two of them actually quite impressive.
No, I agree. So when you lost Victor Cruz, everyone had to step up. You lost the face of the franchise offensively. You lost a little bit of that morale, the leadership. You lost all those things, but Cruz has been out for over 2 games now. So, I mean, all these guys naturally have to step up. And I think the Pro Football Focus predicted, I think he would have caught 40 more balls this year, and that means about 60 attempts to get those 40 balls. So Eli Manning's still going to throw the football. And if you look at Eli Manning's numbers, he's 14 touchdowns, I think, and maybe 5 interceptions. I don't want to misquote that. He's on par for 30 touchdowns and less than 10 interceptions. He's done his job. But that
going into the season, that 70% completion percentage goal that they were trying to really reach, he's on line for that. Let's continue with our calls, yes? 201-939-4513. We go to Steve in Staten Island. Steve, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Hello, Anita. Hello, Roman. How are you?
Hi, Steve.
All right. Hey, listen, Anita. Like I said to you last year, as a fan, all right, I don't give up on this team until I pick up that paper and read mathematically eliminated. So with that being said, there should be nobody asking about what they can do for the playoffs. You're a fan. You believe this team is going to do it. Now, listen to me. Let me get into what I got to say, and then I got a question for you. And if it's possible, I'd like to hear your answer off the air. Let me ask you. You know, they brought in McAdoo for this West Coast-style offense, and that's all well and good. Don't knock on Gilbride, but, you know, times change, people change. Here's what I don't like, what I'm seeing. And you saw it was very prevalent for the first 2 quarters of the game. I'm watching the level of conservativeness here. 3rd and 15, you're running draw plays. Now, listen, we can go back to that Steeler game, and I don't want to talk about their offensive line because their offensive line ain't all that to begin with.
Whose offensive line?
Does what Roethlisberger does. He puts the ball up. You guys know Eli's threat. Drop back, put it up. You got Beckham for a reason. I mean, this kid, Eli is a downfield quarterback. You guys know it. This guy's got to take that step back and just heave it up there. And you know what? I trust Beckham. And believe it or not, when Reuben Randle's head is in the game, he's a good receiver on that team. So I don't understand why it's like they got cuffs on him.
What? How about I read a stat today. I just don't go anywhere. Don't hang up yet. I want to share this with you.
I got a question for you anyway.
You know, Eli Manning, 0-for-7 downfield on Monday night for the season. Get this, 4-of-26 downfield. I know what you're saying, and we heard what Jerry Reese said to the media this past week. You know, he wants this offense to be more aggressive. He wants to see Eli Manning take shots downfield. But look at those stats.
Listen, I know where you're going with this, Anita, and you know what? Stop me if I'm wrong. When you got a quarterback like Eli that, to me, his bread and butter is taking shots down the field, what complements that quarterback is the receiver to get there. You got Beckham. Bottom line, you're out of Cruz. You got Beckham. That's where you take your chances downfield.
Well, let me do this. Let me tee this up for Roman then. Okay. So you know, you do have Odell Beckham Jr.
Right.
What are you seeing? What are you seeing happening offensively? Is the offensive line not giving Eli enough time? What are you seeing offensively that we're not seeing? Odell, we're seeing the short intermediate passing routes for Odell Beckham Jr. Why aren't we seeing him downfield? What did you see on Monday night?
This offense.
I saw Kevin Gilbride play calling. I'm sorry.
Well, no, I
cut you off. That's what it reminded me of.
It's okay.
It was like we were watching Kevin Gilbride, you know, fax the play in. Again, I'm not knocking McAdoo. It's first season, first year with new team. I get that. But, you know, all right, listen, here's my quick question, and then I'll hang up, and thank you for taking my call. I must have missed it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't they sign Ogletree last week, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah. Right.
And if they did, and I'm not saying, look, he's no Des Bryant, but you know what? He's a lot better than Preston Parker at this point. And you know what? If Preston Parker's going to drop four balls in a row, bottom line, you can't blame Eli. You can't blame the offensive line. You need a guy out there that's going to catch this ball and come up with a first down when you're third and four, third and three, or whatever, if you can't trust your running game. Thank you very much for taking my call, guys. You guys did great.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve,
but
from
first,
Staten Island.
Kind of, because I'm curious. I want to get your take in regard to, you know, why aren't we seeing, I guess, more downfield passing plays with the fact that Odell Beckham Jr. is pretty fast. And even if he doesn't catch the ball, Roman, chances are he's gonna you know, bring one of those, like, you know, defensive corner
right.
DB holding penalties
right.
That, of course, the Zebras are so quickly to throw the flag on this season.
You know, I'm going to respond the same way I did about the Corey Washington question. And this offense is predicated on the system. Running the ball, being physical at the line of scrimmage, throwing passes in rhythm, guys doing a lot of shallow routes, a lot of you call it eight routes or what do you call that? Those kind of routes. Coming across the middle of the field.
Oh, what, post?
Yeah, post. Not a lot of skinny
square
posts.
In.
Not a lot of, yeah, square ins. I mean, that's this offense. What's called a bang eight when I was in with Cam Cameron or Northern San Diego. I mean, it's not just running vertical routes. And the running game has to work for this offense to work. And there's a direct correlation between how this offensive line is played when Rashard Jennings got injured and when Andre Williams has gotten the full brunt of all the carries. Now, Peyton Hillis has done an admirable job. Andre Williams has done an admirable job. But what we saw in that Texans game, Atlanta game, with that running game, that's what you would have seen mature and where they are now would have been better. I can't wait to see Rashard Jennings come back here because he will draw safeties in the box when he's in the backfield. It'll just happen. He can catch. He can run screens. He can do it all. He can block. I mean, to take a safety out of the middle of the field and put him down, you will get some more one-on-one matchups. So it all works together. And I want to keep continuing to go back to the fact that it's not about one guy going the ball deep because you're just supposed to throw deep once a series. I know Phil Simms likes to say you got to have a deep pass like at least once a series so defense respects you. And
right.
No. It's about running the football, managing. I mean, look at what Dallas Cowboys are doing. Scott Linehan is a offensive coordinator. He's an air-it-out guy. When he was at the Rams, when he was at Minnesota. In college, he was at Louisville. I mean, he'd throw the ball downfield every down. But they found a way to adjust based on what the personnel is. And so I think Ben McAdoo is trying to adjust to what the personnel is based on the injuries, based on who's playing the best, based on the trust that they have on what really they think is going to work well during the week that they could use on Sundays. And when it doesn't work and you have all these drops and you have the second and 12s and you're not seeing – Andre Williams gassed through the line of scrimmage. And, I mean, this guy is a physical punishing runner. I think Andre Williams is better running a stretch play to get some momentum and then attack the corners. But I haven't seen a lot of good blocking at the edges. You know, Larry Donnell and Fells, those guys are great, good. But in terms of blocking and that Howard Cross model of tight end that I played with, there aren't any guys like that. So it all correlates with each other. And it results in saying, why don't we see Odell Beckham going downfield more because he runs a 4-3-8 and he attacks pass. Yeah, that'll happen. But the downfield passes where they did throw, were a lot of them were dropped. And these weren't vertical passes. These were coming across the middle, squaring routes that were just dropped. 25, 30-yard potential gains that were dropped.
Again, just to share the stat, Eli Manning, Monday night, 0-for-7 and passes 20 yards or more. And for the season, 20 yards or more, 4-for-26, just FYI. 201-939-4513. Let's continue with our calls. We go to Ernest calling in from Connecticut. Ernest, welcome.
Thank you, Anita. I am really disappointed in Roman's assessment of Corey Washington. I'm with you, Anita, with that. If you have receivers out there, and he's saying to himself, that are dropping passes, I mean, they're not doing the job. You can't do any worse than putting a Corey up Washington and see what happens. I mean, to me, what is the adjustment? I mean, you know, when they go in at halftime and they come out, They're still trying to run that big power running back. He's not really that fast. He's a young back. He's a power back, and he's good. But why not try to change up with a Michael Cox? Let's see what happens. If you have Rashad Jennings, who was running, you know, getting these 100 and 170 yards run, and then all of a sudden you have this rookie in there and he's not doing it, then what's the problem? If Jennings was doing it and he's out, then why can't this rookie do it?
Because he's not getting the blocking. Because guys are Ernest, I have to cut you off. If you're not getting the blocking at the point of attack, if you're not getting the blocking at the point of attack, that's Jerry, Richburg, and J.D. Wall. If you're not getting the blocking at the point of attack, if you're not surging past line of scrimmage, so the running back doesn't get past line of scrimmage before he gets contacted, it doesn't matter who's running the ball.
Well, he's talking about Corey Washington.
He talked about the running game. Yeah, I answered that and then went back to Corey Washington. And I say this again, guys, fans don't know what grasp of this offense Corey Washington has. You don't know how good of a gunner he is or isn't. They've been trying to get him on the field all season.
But this is an interesting point. This is what I'm getting on Twitter. And guys, please keep your Twitter comments coming. And that is the fight in the dog, the desire. I think, you know, you've got a guy who wants to get on the field, who just wants that opportunity. He's hungry. Where I it seems like
everyone
a lot of fans
always
don't
loves the other guy who hasn't gotten on the field Ruben based Randall's on what happened in preseason. And I really wish a lot of the fans were more intelligent that has better questions than that. Like, stop asking questions about what about T2 coming back? The guys that are playing are the guys that establish the trust to go out there and get it done on Sundays. Now, if they're dropping balls, you won't be able to drop balls for long because you will get replaced. So, like I said, I love Corey Washington. I love all the guys that are – because I know how hard it is to work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, get on a plane and try to win a football game. I did it for 12 years, and I have a lot of respect for the guys in the locker room. But if you're not getting it done, you will get replaced. This isn't about getting football.
But, Roman, I guess that's what the fans are saying, is that Ruben Randall's not getting it done. So why don't we give Corey Washington an opportunity to see if he can bring it? He's not. That's what the fans
are
saying.
He's getting an opportunity, but you're going to start Corey Washington over Ruben Randall tomorrow because he had a great preseason?
No, but I think the fans would like to see a little bit more of Corey Washington. That's what I'm getting.
But Corey Washington will get on the field more for what he does when he doesn't have a football in his hand than when he has a football in his hand, and that's special teams. That's being a gunner, that's whatever. When he dresses, that's when he's active. And if they could sprinkle him at the end, I'm sure he's doing as much as he can to establish more credibility with the coaching staff. But Ruben Randall is a starter until he's not the starter anymore. He's not the starter for a series, and then you sprinkle in Corey Washington for the rest of the game. I mean, sometimes, and I know in the baseball analogy, you got to let it play out. You've got to – if it's a slump, I don't think Ruben Randall has a dropping slump. I just haven't seen Ruben Randall play – consistent stellar games 4, 5, 6 weeks straight. We haven't seen that. We didn't see Victor Cruz do it either. We saw the drops. We saw him not getting a target. We saw all that. So, you know, Corey Washington is going to ride on a white horse and save this offense. Now, everyone would like to see everyone get more involved, but it's an evolving, improving process, and I really hope that fans understand that. And I told you this about a month ago, Anita, and you know I'm as genuine and honest as I have to be that way. I'm only going to give the viewpoint of a guy who played the game and has been in the huddles and been in the locker room and been in the coaches' meetings. I can't give a fan's perspective because I'm a fan of the game. I respect the game. That's why when I talk about these other teams.
I don't think anyone's asking you for a
fan
perspective.
No, but I can't give any other perspective. So when I say, what about Corey Washington? I'll tell you what about Corey Washington. He's got to continue to get better as a receiver. And we keep having these visions of what he did in a preseason game. How is he as a gunner? Do the fans know that? How is he on special teams?
Yeah, but that's they're not worried about that. What they're worried about this offense because what they see is this offense struggling. So they want to say, okay, how do we improve the offense? How do we get more completion?
You improve it from within,
how do we
and you let these guys be professionals
and
do their job.
I say we. But how do the Giants move the chains? How do you know? And obviously, what's out there right now isn't working. It hasn't for the past two games, and it's not going to get any easier on the road in Seattle against the 12th man. So they're looking for something. They're looking, you know, I don't blame the fans. They're looking for an answer. They're looking for something that they're hoping catapults this offense into putting points on the board because obviously Ruben Randall isn't fitting the bill.
In terms of the improvement. one thing that, and I'm sure the fans would agree, you saw the goose egg on the road against the Eagles. That was, I think, a low point in the season. Then you saw a better performance against Dallas. They fought harder, didn't win. And then with the bye week, I think everyone expected maybe an improvement from that Dallas game, or what they did offensively. Plus, coming at home, Tom Coughlin talked about, you know, the 12th man last week and the fans and getting back home and Strahan's being honored. The guys that broke that locker room to a man didn't improve at the rate that everyone expected them to improve, and didn't put on the right product that everyone expected.
Didn't play above the X's and O's.
No, they didn't.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Dre from Atlanta. Dre, welcome. Welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, Nito? What's up, Roman?
Hey, Dre.
Hey, I'm going to tell you what. I'm not even going to talk about the defense, because I think the defense busted their butt. But they just couldn't do it without any help from the offense. I just want to touch on the offense. I don't see anyone galvanizing the team, that offense, together. You know, it seems like it just, to me, it just seemed like a total disrespect to Eli. Fight for Eli. Fight for the guy next to you. You know, I mean, Reuben Randle, his skill is what it is. And if he's not hungry, then, you know, we went ahead and we brought in Ogletree. Ogletree has the speed. If you have Odell Beckham and Ogletree stretching the field, you don't have to go 20 yards. But just the fact that you even have one route going 20 yards and then you have a quick slant, you have a post, you're going to make that defense kind of honest. You're going to keep them honest. You know, if you get the safeties out the box, then, you know, maybe this RJ Williams may have a little sliver to slide through and get at least 4 yards on a carry.
Dre, let me throw this question, because I'm with you, but let me and thank you for the phone call. Appreciate you watching.
And he calls a lot, so I appreciate you calling every week.
How much do you think it is Ogletree in regard to, like, you know, joining this team late in the season and learning the offense and understanding? I mean, how difficult of an offense do you think this is to really understand, learn, digest, and be able to execute? Is that a reason why maybe we're not seeing more of Ogletree in the game plan?
No, because I think when you get traded or get signed in the middle of the season and you're sitting in that hotel room by yourself and your family's back home, you've got nothing else to do except learn that playbook. And from the receiver position, and I talk to Monty Toomer about this all the time, this is about concepts, not numerical routes. So what you would call, you know, 989, I mean, 2-9 routes and an 8 or whatever, now it's called something else. It's called Spider 2 or it's called whatever. So
elephant beat the bear, wiggle waggle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, and again, when you play on multiple teams, you get every offense in the book. So I've had both offenses, even Gilbride's offense when I was in Cleveland with Chris Palmer, ran the same thing with Tim Couch. So I get it, going from one to the other. But again, it's about understanding the concepts, not so much the routes. So it's really terminology. And if you're a veteran and you've been on multiple teams, you're expected to come through and say, okay, what are we doing this play? All right, okay, then that's a go route. Okay, what is it? I mean, you may have one of those wristbands with the plays, a cheat sheet, whatever. But I don't think Ogletree's not playing early on, like the day they signed him, is a result of him not knowing the offense. I think you can learn this offense as a veteran in a week or two.
201-939-4513 with you for another 15 minutes here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Anita Marks and Roman Oben. Let's go to Vic calling in from Connecticut. Vic, welcome.
Good morning, guys.
Right. How are you?
Actually, good afternoon. I guess I missed that.
Yeah.
I've got a few questions for you that I'm dying to ask. And I would just preface it by saying, you know, I don't want to be Chicken Little. The sky is falling. But I think probably some pieces are. And a lot of that is attributed to the injuries that they have on the team and many other things. So I'll start off my questions just with number one. Because of the injuries and how severe they are at this point of the year, and if they continue and they're lengthy, which a lot of them are, at the end of the year when the coaches sit down and do their, you know, post-mortem, if you will, with Mr. Mira, is injuries something that they get a pass on, do you think, with Giants management? How much does that factor into the year-end decisions?
Everyone deals with injuries. You know, everyone around the league deals with injuries. I mean, this team has played games. I think the Atlanta game, the Houston game, the O-line was beat up. I mean, this team, the Philadelphia game, which you thought they were going to go down there and trounce the Eagles in their place after that three-game winning streak because their O-line was so battered up and this guy was injured. That everyone deals with injuries, and it's a part of the game. I think injuries at critical positions are more of an effect on a season than not. So, you know, knock on wood, obviously, guys, the quarterback position injuries, that affects an entire season. Obviously, a cornerback, a guy like Prince Mukamura, who's probably one of the better corners in the league this year, the way he was playing. I think Pro Football Focus had him like sixth best corner in the league in terms of passer rating against him versus completion percentage. So, and I know that's not an exact science, but I do believe in some of the quantifying those numbers. Quarterback, corner, a pass rusher, you know, JPP. Talked about what the Indianapolis Colts have been able to do without Robert Mathis. So quarterback, corner, you know, a left tackle. You know, Beattie was injured. I mean, so there's specific positions that injuries weigh in a little bit more than others. But you still have to line up and play football. And that's why it's so important that roster, when that roster is comprised, you're keeping nine offensive linemen. You got two quarterbacks. I mean, look at what happened in Philadelphia. You talked about Mark Sanchez. When you have – I mean, this team was considered the best secondary coming out of training camp.
This is where I was going to go with this, and that is, you know, I think when you look at injuries and how injuries do affect a team in regard to, like, how good they were supposed to be. Yeah, the secondary, I think that is an issue where you're like, whoa, you know, this was a secondary that a lot of people, I had them top five in the NFL, and it's just, wow, things just went bad quickly and a lot of injuries. Where, let's say, for example, on the offensive line, you know, I think that there's more disappointment in regard to the offensive line, the talent, and the depth of the offensive line, as opposed to the secondary
right. This
season. So at the end of the, I guess what I'm saying is, at the end of the year, I think there'll be more disappointment in regard to lack of talent and lack of good talent / depth at the offensive line as compared to the secondary. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And that's a fair statement. And I guess that falls back on the scouting department and Jerry Reese. But well, that's down the road. So I've got something a little more relevant. In the game the other night, you know things are really bad when you can't even execute the pull the flag out of your sock play. You know, my question to you guys is this: is, you know, Coughlin really wanted to challenge that play, I think, but you know, by the time he bent down, and by the time he maybe got something in his ear, and by the time he threw the flag, it was you know, the thing, it was just too late. But my question is as he's doing that, and as Antrel Roll, the leader of the team, is on the field, I'm watching a fire drill out there, and he's clearly seeing it, and Roll is clearly trying to line people up, but nobody had the foresight to see a Luck run to the line, and nobody just called timeout, never mind the flag. Why do you think they couldn't get a timeout in that situation when it didn't look like they were going to line up correctly, regardless of a challenge or not?
I'm going to let Roman answer that question, but let me throw this out, and that is, you know, you have to commend Andrew Luck on that play.
Yeah,
Andrew Luck knew immediately that play was was very questionable, and he got his offense on that line of scrimmage, and he hiked that ball, he centered that ball before Tom could grab, and the Giants really had an opportunity to really throw the flag and try to question the call. So we got to give some credit to Andrew Luck, but
you know,
but your thoughts on if you're Andrew Roll, would you have? And another thing is, can he call timeout?
Yeah, I'm sure he can. A player in the field can certainly do. I know the coach can do it from the sideline. I believe the player can also do it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the umpire or which official. You have to make sure you go to him and call the timeout. But to your point, what the Colts and I've been on. I mentioned Rob Chudzinski, who was with me in San Diego. We used to practice this. It was called first play after a controversial first down, and you say, you know, Rambo, and then you run up to the line, you just run a dive or you run another play. I mean, you practice that during the week. You practice in training camp for the one time that it might happen. The team isn't able to get their challenge flag out, whether it's the official spots the ball properly and he winds the clock. But that was really a smart heads up play by Andrew Luck and the Indianapolis Colts. And that's not something that you do on the whim. You practice that. I've been on multiple teams that practice that. It's called, like, you know, you have certain days that are situational. So it's, you know, after a big first down is a controversial. They think it's a first down, then you go, you run another play right away.
What did you guys, in your post-game show, what did you say about that one play, that one call? I'm sure you guys talked about it on the post-game show.
Yeah, we said that exactly. A lot of guys said, but I said that you practice that as an offense to, you know, the first play after a first down. It's like when you've seen the New England Patriots, you know, first and goal, like from the 4-yard line. And they hurry up and run a play, and Tom Brady fakes the snap, and he jumps up in the air, and he's a direct snap to the running back. I mean, they've been doing that for a decade. I'm sure you're familiar with that play. But, I mean, there's certain things that you practice – to go right after a controversial first down.
Really quick, our producer is sending me some, I guess from Antro Roll being on WFAN yesterday. This is Tom Coughlin? Okay, this is Tom Coughlin after the game. Were you trying to signal for a challenge? He said, I was trying to do anything I could to stop that, stop the clock, stop the game, whatever, whether it was or not. Seriously, did I think that they didn't catch the ball or whatever? I felt he caught the ball. So were you trying to challenge because you noticed the defense was not lined up correctly? Tom Coughlin's response, I was trying to do anything I could to slow down. Oh, so you sent me the same thing twice. Okay. So anyway, that was Tom Coughlin's response. Just FYI.
So my last question, and I'll let somebody else get in here. The comment and the question. I think we need to get close. I know it's been looked at with the competition committee, but you know, it's 2014. We've got tablets on the sidelines. We got to get these guys a buzzer into the umpire's ear or something. So a 67-year-old man doesn't have to find his way to the ground to find a beanbag in a sock. I just don't think it makes a whole lot of sense at this point. But so the last question I have for you is this: I know a lot of people, a lot of Giants fans, ask this question, and it's why does Eli seem frustrated sometimes, and why are the announcers always saying they were on the same page? Him and, you know, Randall ran left and Eli threw right and Cruz did this, whatever. And we've been hearing this since the spring. And believe me, I don't claim to be able to memorize the Giants playbook. I probably couldn't get past first and 10 with all the language they use. And I honestly think that coordinators overthink plays terribly. They make them too long and complicated. But my question is when can Giants fans expect, since we've been doing this since March in training camp and now, you know, 8, 9, 10 games, when are we going to lose the comments about not on the same page, not on the same page, not on the same page? Or do we start to get rid of some of those people that can't get on the same page? And I'm not suggesting Eli by any means, but some of the receivers that run this way instead of that way. Do you think that will come to an end and maybe next season will be more cohesive?
Well, I think you've heard it a lot less this season than last season in terms of this, you know, not getting on the same page with Eli and the poor quarterback-receiver relationship. And I said this earlier, I think Eli Manning's done as commendable of a job, proving that he can play better than he did last year. I mean, he's only got, I think, 4 or 5 interceptions this year. I think the problem has been the drops. The problem for me, Anita, has really been the drops, and those drops in critical situations. Now, balls will get overthrown, underthrown, a ball will get tipped, but you haven't seen that happen as much this year. As last year. I mean, last year, the 27 interceptions, I mean, I think 8 of them were like tip balls on screens and all kinds of stuff. So I think they worked well to eliminate that portion of it. But again, it goes back to this offense. When you uncover as a receiver and you create some form of separation for that defensive back and you turn, and that ball should be right there. And that's why this offense is great in terms of the rhythm and the timing. And when all that timing's working well, then you are on the same page. When it's not, then you're not. But I think it's a misnomer to say that there's all this talk of quarterbacks not being on the same page, because we've seen this offense this year, this season, at their peak. Obviously, the 3 games they won were doing well. They're doing well offensively, but obviously the inability to start fast and score early is something that this offense has not done well, and that's a result of a lot of things, not just receivers and quarterbacks not being on the same page. It's a running game. It's third down. It's a host of things.
Thanks for giving me the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you for the phone call. Another thing I think that, you know, we need to mention, we've been talking about Rashad Jennings in regard to the rushing attack, but also what he meant to this offense in the passing game as well. That is a dimension that Andre Williams does not bring to the program, which I think hurts, obviously, Eli Manning. In this passing attack. Just FYI, 201-939-4513. We've just got about 6 minutes left in the program. Let's try to get through our last two calls. We've got Lynn calling in from Maryland. Lynn, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, guys? Good to talk to you.
What part of Maryland are you from?
Yeah, good. Listen, Anita, you acted surprised at the behavior of the fans and what they were saying in the stands.
It's not that I was surprised. It's just it was pretty brutal. I mean, it was...
From a guy who's been sitting there since 1964, traveling all over the country to see this team play 8 times a year in their home stadium. Let me give the owner a rule of thumb. Never send your best customers home dissatisfied, because you're going to hear it for the next week. You know, there were weeks like this. Here's what I repeat to myself to get through them, Anita. 56, 86, 91, 2007, 2011, and I take a deep breath and I feel better. I mean, those are Super Bowl and World Championship years, okay? Tom's going to put the right people on the field, guys. He's going to put the right people out there. I mean, that's his job. If Michael Cox isn't playing because when he gets in there as a running back, Eli's still got a point to where he should be standing at the start of the play. Tom, you know, Tom's going to put the guys out there and put them in a position at which we're going to have our best chance to win. You know what? I'm not totally dissatisfied with runs on third and 15 deep in your own territory in the first quarter. I mean, we got to stay alive against a team like this. You can't throw it away in the first quarter. We got to be in the game in the fourth quarter. Sometimes you fold to live the next series, okay? Roman, here's what got me the other night, and I think you really alluded to it with our, you know, our front seven, or the front five. You know, when you look at the box score, I haven't looked at the game a second time. I can't do that. But when you look at the box score to sum up what was happening, I saw two very, very pedestrian nose tackles on the Indianapolis Colts. Undrafted free agent rookie from Delaware and another guy.
Not exactly a powerhouse football program.
Dominate the line of scrimmage.
Right.
Dominate. That's why we were in a lot of second and nines. You know, nose tackles don't get sacks. 3-4 defenses are about stopping the run, Roman.
Yeah, I know.
Nose tackles, their job is to tie up blockers, not to make. Between the two of them, I think they had 7 tackles and a sack. Vince Wilfork doesn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean that was just, you know, and the whole thing. I don't know how many offensive linemen we've got under contract when you go into the practice squad and so forth, but Jesus, man, we can't find some guys to block. I mean, and I'll tell you, I like the offensive system. I think it's coming along. I think we got something here. I don't think we've seen more than 50% of this offensive system. I think there are some things McAdoo can't do. I guess he doesn't have the players to do it. But I like it. I particularly like the red zone. Look, we had 3 scores in the red zone. I don't care who's on the field for the other team. Don't tell me about backups. I don't want to hear that. We had 3 scores in the red zone the other night. When did we have a game in the recent past where we had 3 scores in the red zone? I mean, you know, we don't do that. And I like the formations. I mean, 4 wides inside the 5. Donnell out as a flanker. I mean, he's not the best blocker, right? But I like him when we get him outside, and when we can get him outside like that, you know,
Lynn.
I think
we
can do
go.
Some business. I think the offense is coming. I think the offense is coming along, and we just gotta.
Lynn, I gotta let you go because I only have about 2 minutes, and I want to get Steve from DC. And
great to talk to you.
But thank you for your phone call. Let's go to Steve in DC.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. You know, first I want to say, you know, I know that, you know, some of the fans' questions may seem a little odd to you or Roman at times, you know, but understand that, you know, we've been watching, you know, the same results over and over again with different excuses. So it's really driving us insane. And it's not, you know, obviously it's not always to have the best question. You know, a lot of us are nervous when we call here. So with that being said, you know, there's really, as far as I'm concerned, there's really no stupid questions. But I just have a quick comment and then I have a question. I'll listen off the air, guys. You know, and I just want to say that, you know, I'm one of those people who has lost confidence in the coaching staff. And, I mean, I can list a host of reasons why, but just the fact that we're not giving these other players the opportunity after watching, you know, players, you know, fail week in and week out. You know, and there's things as this, you know, it was a situation with DRC playing at 50% when we got people on the bench who are 100% and we're not giving them opportunities. So that's really hard to swallow as a fan. So I know we are fans and we get fanatical, but we're just looking for change because obviously doing the same thing over and over again is not working. It's going to drive anyone insane. So with that being said, I have my own philosophy as to why I think the running game is not as effective with Andre Williams, and it really has nothing to do with running. Obviously, it's more about the blocking and particularly Q in that offensive line. But the thing is, it's the play calling as well. I realize that the word on him is, oh, he's not as good a catcher. But first of all, it wasn't a very good ball that he did end up catching eventually. And then that loosened up the running game. So if we get this guy in space, which is what Jennings is able to create through the pass, through the screen pass, and him being able to catch out of the backfield, the defense plays differently. So he's just as capable as a runner as Jennings, in my opinion. It's just that we have to, it's up to the coaches in order to get the right play in to create space. So I just wanted to know what your thoughts on that were. And that's really all I have today, man. I appreciate
Thank you.
The call. And great show, guys.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. So
thank
final,
you, Steve.
Final
Steve
thoughts.
From
Real
my
quick,
hometown.
We're already 1 o'clock.
Yeah, I know it's already 1 o'clock. No, and I wasn't trying to whatever I said about the fan about the Corey Washington question, but it's every week is the Corey Washington question. And when they lose the game,
because fans are just looking for an answer.
No, I know, but it's even as a former player, I'm not in the meeting rooms now, so some questions we have to be speculative about. But the bottom line is the Giants have lost three in a row after winning three in a row and starting off 0-2. So they've got to decide from the mid. This is the midpoint of the season for them. You know, what team do they want to be? How do they want 2014 to be remembered? And there's nothing about that that you and I, we can just talk about it. I mean, that's what we're paid to do, obviously. But they've got to decide and really come together, play some team football. I'd love to see the Giants start fast on the road. That's something they haven't done. And maybe score. March down 8, 9 plays, 10 plays and score in the first series and show the Seattle Seahawks that they're going to be in for a dogfight. And this isn't the team that's lost three in a row. So that's my take.
All right. So Romanov and Anita Marks, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Unfortunately, media not here today. There's going to be a ton of phone conferences. But media in on, of course, Thursday and Friday. Those interviews with the players will be up on Giants.com. And are you in tomorrow with Paul Dottino?
Yes, I am.
So make sure you tune in tomorrow, high noon Eastern time right here on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live, Paul Dottino in Roman Oben. Everybody have a great afternoon.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got through on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Want him to get some?